Alaska has enjoyed big projects based on big oil revenues for decades, but declining production means state spending must slow down or the budget reserve will be depleted. I'm Lori Townsend. We're in deficit spending now. The state's population continues to climb and the demand for services and infrastructure development is growing. How do we meet the needs of Alaskan communities without bankrupting the state? What does the fiscal future look like for Alaska? What should it look like? We'll discuss it today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, with health plans designed specifically for Alaska businesses. Learn more at primera.com/newalaska, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. This morning we're going to be talking about state finances. Fiscal cliff is a term that has been somewhat overused on the federal and state level to describe what critics say is unsustainable spending of public dollars. There's a lot of debate about what areas of public funding should be cut from governmental budgets, as well as debate about how quickly the current level of spending will eventually send us careening into the abyss. I wanted some strong language to start things off. Joining me to discuss the decisions that will need to be made for Alaska's future fiscal stability is Cliff Groh, an attorney who has worked in the past on financial matters for the state legislature and as a special assistant to the Commissioner of Revenue. Cliff is also the board chair of Alaska Common Ground. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning, Lori.
Thanks so much for being here. Also in the studio is Eric Woolforth. Eric is a past revenue commissioner for Alaska and former chair of the Board of Trustees for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Mr. Woolforth is also a leader in public finance law in Alaska. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Laurie. Good to be here.
So let's discuss, first of all, Alaska Common Ground is sponsoring a forum that's coming up in October on the financial future of Alaska. Cliff, give us a brief overview of what Common Ground is and what you're hoping to achieve with a day-long discussion on October 4th on the state's future.
Thanks, Lori. Alaska Common Ground is a public policy organization dedicated to helping Alaskans get together and face the major problems confronting our state. And we're pleased and feel lucky to present on all-day Saturday, October 4th, at the Wilder Marson Theater in Anchorage's Lusac Library, a forum on Alaska's fiscal future, and we're co-presenting that with ICER, the Institute of Social and Economic Research of the University of Alaska. We're lucky enough to have some very fine sponsors for that event as well. Commonwealth North, which is lucky enough to have Eric Woolforth as a president of its board of directors, the League of Women Voters of Alaska, the League of Women Voters of Anchorage, Anchorage Public Library, and as of just yesterday, North Rim Bank, which has generously agreed to arrange for video recording of this event. And I'm still seeking money for live streaming and for editing of that to make sure people can watch and listen to this around the state and even around the world, having gotten requests from as far away as Germany and Qatar. So this event is about Alaska's biggest and most complicated problem. That's why it goes all day long, Lori. But hey, I don't want people to be scared. There's sandwiches for sale for $15 in the middle of the day. So you can last from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. or even for selected portions, we'll post our agenda on our website at www.akcommonground.org. And we're going to talk about and get people to understand the big picture here of the problem and all the solutions. You know, what's the long-term outlook for Alaska's oil revenues? What does it cost to provide the services Alaskans want? You know, what are the state's debt payments and pension obligations? How does funding for big projects like the gas line and LNG export project or the Susitna-Wantana Dam or the Kinnick Arm Crossing fit in with the fiscal realities the state faces now? And what choices do we have and what are our options to deal with the Prudhoe Bay Curve, which is the issue of the state running largely on oil, and oil production, of course, has been falling for more than a quarter century now.
How will you, we're going to take some of those big projects a little bit later in the conversation here, but how do you hope to build consensus among Alaskans? These subjects are subjective. You can define a need at one place in the state as a need, and in another place in the state, people may say, well, that's just a desire or a want. What's your plan for that day to try to come to some kind of consensus?
In the morning, we're going to at least have a very good and clear, as clear as possible, discussion of what the facts are, because I do think that's one of the most important places to start, is to understand what the state spends, how that's changed over time, how the state makes its money, and how the state's revenues are allocated. And so that's the first task. In the morning, we'll really focus a lot on that. And then in the afternoon, we'll talk more about potential solutions. And that's why I say it runs on so long from 9 a.m. to 5:30, because there is a lot to sort of have people understand.
Yes, there certainly is. You can join our conversation. What are your thoughts for how the state can meet the needs without breaking the bank? Should all options be on the table, including the permanent fund? If you had the red pen to delete things from the state budget, what would they be? You can join our conversation outside of Anchorage. The number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. Or if you're calling in Anchorage, you can call 550-8422, 550-8422, or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org or talk@aprn.org. We're talking about the fiscal future of Alaska, and I want to get Eric Woolforth in on the conversation now. Eric, you were the revenue commissioner under Governor Egan in 1970. You had $900 million to invest, and that's still an awful lot of money, although the dollar amounts that we're seeing today in the state and state spending, of course, are kind of dwarf those numbers. How different was the mindset then, and what we were facing as far as how to invest the state's earnings to pay for government? What were you dealing with then compared to where we are now, as far as sort of the philosophy and the ideology of lawmakers and citizens alike?
That's a great question. In 1970, we were sort of at the cusp of the beginning. Although we had a $900 million windfall, if you will, which is the oil lease sale in the prior year, that was approximately six times the state's budget in the year before the oil lease sale. So we thought the $900 million was an incredible amount of money. And interestingly enough, as we had the money, state expenditure began to rise sharply, largely because we had some really large unmet needs. I can remember, for example, the very beginning of the Native corporations starting, and in fact, the new North Slope borough being created, and Governor Egan saying to me, I think as Commissioner of Revenue, you should loan money to these new entities. And I said, I'm not sure they're a really good financial risk, Governor. He said, loan the money, which I did. So that was at the very beginning. Everything was possible. We hadn't defined our future yet. And of course, we were waiting for the Alaska Pipeline, which was a four-year slog from 1970 to 1974. That event in 1974 was, of course, the very beginning of the financial situation we're in now, because the oil flow from the pipeline enabled us to, in the 80s, to create this permanent fund now, which looms so large in our financial picture now at $51 billion.
Mm-hmm. Our state budget consists of federal dollars, investment money, state dollars. Alaska spends more per capita than any other state. And we've certainly heard for years that we need it because we're young. Although once you're over 50, I don't know if you can still say you're young. And we have we have big infrastructure needs. Federal money's getting harder to come by. Does our status as the 49th state, one of the youngest states, does that justify our higher level of per capita spending?
Well, yes, I think it does. We forget sometime our remoteness, our 2,500 miles, I would say almost from anywhere, major, large city, the higher cost of living, the unmet needs of a new state. But, you know, regardless of that, we have realized since in the last 20 or 30 years that with one income source, oil revenues, we were in an ultimately possibly precarious financial condition. And why is it precarious? Because oil revenues are volatile. The state has 80 to 85% of its income derived from that. And we have only one source of revenue. So the need to do capital projects and to fund our budget to compensate for our remoteness is balanced by this unique revenue system that we have, which we wisely mitigated the volatility of by creating the permanent fund, which is now at $51 billion. And incidentally, last year increased its size by 15%. And which produces the dividend that we all enjoy as part of its income. Mm-hmm. It's not widely known, and it needs to be emphasized that one half of the annual revenue of the permanent fund goes back into the fund. And so we've had fiscal policy efforts over the last 20 years. How do we deal with this unique, unusual, and in many respects uncomfortable economic situation? And a number of those fiscal policy efforts, two in particular, almost achieved success. In 2001 and 2002, one was largely dominated by legislators, which is good because they make the ultimate enactment to put on the books the answers. And the other one in 2004, which was a conference of Alaskans in Fairbanks, had strong support from the governor. But we didn't make it in those statewide policy efforts. And I can talk more why we didn't make it before I turn this into a lecture.
Well, let's talk about some of those things. But first, I just want to clarify what you said about the permanent fund earnings. So the investments that the permanent fund is making with the $51 billion, mm-hmm. half of those investments are plowed right back into the fund, and half are paid out in dividends.
Half
is that right?
Of the actual income. And we have this peculiar thing that in our constitutional amendment creating the permanent fund, we said that the income is fully expendable. The actual income is fully expendable by the legislature, and the legislature has determined that one half of that income, in a formula that I don't have to rehearse here, but it's basically one half over a five-year period, become the dividend. The dividend is not enshrined in the state constitution, another thing perhaps not widely known, and that issue comes up every time we have one of these statewide efforts. Shouldn't we put the dividend in the state constitution? So that's the basic formula of where we get our dividend every year.
Mm-hmm. Cliff, did you want to add something there?
Yeah. Alaska's fiscal system is by far the most unusual, as Eric said, unique, and most unstable in the United States, and features four very unusual things. The high state spending per capita relative to national averages, you mentioned, Lori. No general statewide taxes on individuals. I know some people complain about property taxes in Anchorage or sales taxes in other places around the state, but this is the only state in the country with no general statewide taxes on individuals. No use of permanent fund principal for anything except generating income. And then no use of permanent fund, fourth would be no use of permanent fund income in significant amounts for anything but paying dividends and protecting the permanent fund principal from inflation. And when you sound, and those four things are financed by the oil revenues, which of course, as I said, have been in decline for 25 years, or I often say since I had brown hair. That's how long it's been. And a lot of what you think about the potential solutions depends on which of those four things I just named is the most unusual in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Let's let some callers in on the discussion. We are talking about Alaska's fiscal future and looking for your thoughts as well. So we're going to go to John in Fairbanks, who has a comment about something I was going to get to at some point, but John will get us there right now, the Ambler Mine Road Project. John, what are your thoughts about that?
Hi, Lori. Thanks. Yeah, I live about 6 months of the year up in the Brooks Range and have met with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, who has been promoting this project. My question is, where is the what's the financial end game here? I've been to several meetings, and they represent themselves as the lemmings of the fiscal cliff here. All through the area, there are resolutions from the local villagers against the road, and none of us can understand where this will possibly help Alaska. Really, the only thing it seems to be hurting in this area is the one thing that we do have that is stable, which is our wildlands, and that we live off of and have economic value from. That is not unstable, unlike these other economies. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, John.
John, thanks for your call. I've heard estimates that the Ambler Road will cost between $430 to $990 million. That's one of the obviously proposed major capital projects that's under discussion here in Alaska. And we have a panel on the fiscal implications of we have two panels on the fiscal implications of proposed major capital projects, one whole one on the gas line, another one on the other ones, including obviously the Ambler Road be one of them.
We are going to talk more extensively about some of these bigger projects as we go forward. I want to get to a couple more calls, but you're listening to Talk of Alaska if you've just joined us. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the fiscal cliff. If people perceive that we're at a fiscal cliff, that's kind of a subjective title, I guess. My guests are Cliff Groh with Alaska Common Ground and Eric Woolforth. We are talking about the state's financial future, and you can join the conversation at 1-800-478-8255 or in the local area, 550-8422. We're going to take another call now, and joining us from Cordova is Dave, and Dave has a comment about the carrying capacity of the economy. Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, it's something that's been on my mind for some time is to how we're going to actually sustain a future economy based on predicted growth or unpredicted growth, even if climate change becomes a huge issue to where Alaska becomes a kind of a fail-safe default place to head to for so many people. I mean, we've seen incredible growth, and where do we expect a resource extractive economy to actually carry the weight for our future without actually getting into our permanent fund? I just think we have to be very, very bold and visionary. And under this current administration, we've devolved and regressed into believing that it's all about letting the unfettered capitalists run free, and the trickle down will ensue. So, anyway, that's a concern of mine. Is can we actually have a carrying capacity for an increasing population, or should we be striving for something that is a bit more stable and equitable for those of us who have made this our home or were born here? So,
all right, anyway. Thanks, Dave. This is an interesting question because I was thinking just a few minutes ago about how, because of the fluctuating oil prices, you talked about the volatility in prices and how it makes it very difficult to build a budget when you're not exactly sure what's going to be coming in. It's kind of like being a freelancer and your income is varying based on what kind of who's paying what for your work. So Dave brings up the point of, how can we figure out the long-term stable regime as the population grows and prices stay in flux?
Well, I see this as sort of an Alaska consensus issue. We have had, over the last 20 and even 30 years, times when we've talked about a fiscal cliff. Oil prices have been down, budgets have gone up. We've tried through the public process to bring Alaskans together, most recently 10 years ago in Fairbanks. Hard as it is, I think we need to try again and try harder. We have peculiar difficulties here in Alaska. We have a lot of hurdles between a good statewide conference and public participation and a result with our two houses of the legislature, the hurdle of that. If we change the Constitution, there's a two-thirds vote required. And finally, the vote of the people if we change or attempt to change the Constitution. One of the bargaining chips towards a real result is thought to be, in many cases, making the dividend part of our state constitution, which it isn't now. Part of the other side of that has been some use of permanent fund income, a permanent fund which is at $51 billion. Other peoples would look at us and say, why are you people talking about financial problems when you've got this? But it seems to me in order to achieve a statewide consensus, we have to recognize the hurdles, and we have to look at where in the world elsewhere people have achieved consensus, and in other places they have. They have in a Euro-wide conference of 27 countries gotten together and determined the size of the Euro. They've done it in British Columbia. They've done it in China. Consensus is possible, but it's a hard effort. It's an effort that has to be really carefully planned, but I think it's an effort that's extremely worthwhile, and I see it as something which could well come out of what I call Cliff's Fiscal Future Conference on October 4th, that getting people together, having an opportunity in a forum for our joint future to be talked about, and then figuring out the next step.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about how that might work, this idea of consensus and getting together. But let's take a couple more calls before we have to go to a break. So we're going to hear from Hotai in Valdez. Good morning.
Well, good morning. My listening to you guys, you're having your meeting on the 4th of October.
Yes.
2 days after the permanent fund. How many of you think are not going to be out there squandering their money rather than come to your meeting?
Hey, as the guy that helped, one of the people that helped create the permanent fund dividend during my work in the legislative staff, I don't quite see it that way. I do think that Alaskans need to think clearly about the future in a comprehensive way, and that's what this forum tries to help people get to do it. And just sitting next to Eric here in the studio, I'm so impressed by his optimism as a man that has been working on these kinds of issues longer than me for over the decades. But I do think that this is, as I said, Alaska's biggest and most complicated problem, and people need to think clearly about it. And I want to add that we've added one more feature that may try to help people. At lunchtime at this forum on Saturday, October 4th, we're going to have a fiscal choices exercise, which tries to get people to understand the real choices and options and work in some way to try to build their own fiscal system. So I do think that there's some potential for some hands-on efforts if people will come to the Wilder Marson Theater to our free public forum on Saturday, October 4th, that maybe people can work harder and think and have more possibilities of thinking more clearly about the difficult choices the state faces.
One of the things that, thank you very much, Hotai, for your call. One of the things that I wanted to point out was, as you said, Eric, a lot of people around our country would say, what are you guys even talking about? You have all these billions, you have $51 billion in the permanent fund, you have billions in your constitutional budget reserve. You guys don't have money trouble. But when you look around the world at other sovereign wealth funds, then we don't look so hot because we're 22nd out of a list of 25. The top country in the world with a government fund is Norway at close to $800 billion, which is just a staggering amount of money. What is so different about, and they started 14 years after we did. They started in 1990. We started in 1976. What's so different about what they're doing versus what we're doing?
Well, one is that they're countries, and we're just a state of the Union. Norway, for example, owns Statoil, a major North Sea oil company. But it's interesting to look at them and see some of the lessons that they've derived. And so we're, in a way, we're unique because we're a part of another of a country that has its own quasi independent economic future tied to the parent country, but in part sort of self-regulating.
Besides the borders point, or the sovereignty issue of whether being a country or a state that Eric just described, there's also, of course, the fact that it's not quite so popular in Alaska that Norwegians pay some of the highest taxes in the world, and Alaskans pay some of the lowest. So in terms of your idea of having a big savings account and operating your government, there's a big fundamental difference right there.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call outside of Anchorage, and 550-8422. Let's hear from Renee outside of Esther. Good morning,
yeah,
Renee.
I think that we're going the wrong direction if we're looking at tapping the permanent fund. And my dream of dreams, I think getting the fund, where it would be self-perpetuating, say $100 billion, and where the returns from that would be more than capable of running the state. But I think we've come here, we're slapping ourselves in the forehead saying, well, there's too little in the till, without even assessing what's supposed to be there. We have specific legislators and administrative persons, governors, who have regularly opposed mandatory timely audits of the year before SB 21 went into effect. The Department of Interior came here and said that under ACES, during relatively high oil prices, less than 7%, or 7% less than international averages. And contradictory to what the oil companies have claimed, one particular and noteworthy, honorable, respectable analyst has researched this and says that contrary to what the oil company said would occur, we've seen a 69% increase in production costs by the oil company's filings over 3 years, with nobody on our end assessing how much of that is bogus. And these are people that from the beginning, looking at Amerada, Hess, and Forward, have been stealing. And I mean, if I stole $200 million, I'd be in prison.
Well,
so
let's.
I think we need to look at what's supposed to be in the till.
Thank you so much for the call, Renee. And let's let our guests weigh in quickly before we have to go to a break.
Well, I think even the Department of Revenue would say, you know, we need an enhanced audit capacity. We need more and better and sharper auditors, and I agree with that. That's as far as I think we can go in that area.
In terms of Renee's other idea of essentially pumping up the permanent fund so that Alaskans could just live off the earnings, well, as a guy that drove over here on the we have a lot less roads. If that had occurred, that would have required different decisions in the 70s and early 80s of less spending and, frankly, higher oil taxes at earlier times when the state had a lot more oil. The pipeline was, you know, three times as full as it is today or more. Now that's much harder to do. Renee's dream of living off the earnings like, you know, a coupon clipper and a fancy New York City apartment is harder to pull off in 2014 than it would have been in 1976.
That's right.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. We are talking about Alaska's fiscal future and what we need to do to address the growing needs in the state, and that's up against the backdrop of declining oil production and declining revenues. Join our conversation when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Doy Unlimited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes, or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Thanks for being with us for Talk of Alaska today. I'm Lori Townsend. We're talking about Alaska's fiscal future and a day-long session that Alaska Common Ground will be holding on October 4th in Anchorage to look at how do we responsibly move into the future in a way that we can be spending sustainably instead of going in the hole. When we talk about looking at what the needs are, and Cliff, you mentioned that Norway has some of the highest taxes in the world, but are Alaskans, are we at a point now where you can't put the genie back in the bottle because we're all so spoiled? I know that when I went into the energy rebate that the state sponsored and weatherization assistance, and when I went in, took my receipts in there, it was such an easy process. And I said, boy, thank you so much to the people at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. This is really, you know, this is great to be able to get some work done and access these funds. And they said, well, wow, thanks for saying thank you, because most people just yell at us, you know, Alaskans are spoiled. They expect a lot of money. Is it going to be tough to sort of rein things in when Alaskans are used to not paying taxes and actually getting paid just for being here? How tough would it be now to try to institute some sort of a tax regime? I was told that at one time, Governor Hammond, and I don't know if this is accurate, but I was told that he had advocated for reducing the income tax to a dollar and just leaving it in place so that the legislature would have a much easier time bringing it in than trying to just create a new system out of whole cloth. Where are we at with that idea?
Well, I think the answer is it's a very tough, and the longer we wait, the tougher it gets. The thing that I think is really important is that people begin to see the curve that's in mind, the expenditure curve rising and the surplus, which we're now living on, because we are in budget deficits every year, diminishing. It's a question of how dangerously do you want to live? At some point, our state legislature, it seems to me, is going to have to deal with a problem, but it needs the public support. It needs public interest. I still think there are enough Alaskans who really care about the future of the state and care about the next generation, their children and grandchildren, that they don't want to look out 8 or 10 or 12 years at a fiscal mess in a state that has to cut its budget to the point where the economy is in drastic condition. I still think we can do it, but it needs imagination. It needs the imagination of the kind of thing that Cliff Groh's Fiscal Future Financial Forum is evidencing: a good start, a full day of intense look at our situation, so that we can start as a community, because we still are a community of people, small in number, can start to devise a financial and fiscal future.
Cliff.
Yeah, I do feel lucky to be able to work with the other people at Alaska Common Ground and ICER and our co-sponsors to put on this forum on Saturday, October 4th, all day at the Wilder Marson Theater. There is going to be a crunch, squeeze, dislocation, harder time for Alaskans. And Eric and I, who were here in the 60s, remember a time where Alaska had a thinner economy than it does today, and people felt poor or poorer. And it is true that Alaska faces some difficult decisions, but the options are better now to think about than later, when they're going to be a lot more difficult. I hope Dave is correct that, hey, climate change will cause maybe some people to Alaska to move to Alaska and increase our population, our economy. I think that there is another big effect that's probably more prominent, which is that the decline in oil production over time, you know, obviously might lead to a shrinking population at some point.
Hmm. We're talking about Alaska's fiscal future. We're going to take another call now, and let's hear from Emily in Juneau. Emily, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. So here in Juneau, the state is proposing to build a $500 million dead-end road. And what's most galling, they came out with a study last week that this will actually cost the state more in the long run than just maintaining our ferry service. Like the Ambler Road, local communities here don't even want this project. And so my question for you, both Eric and Cliff, and your experience in the state, how do we get decision makers to look at these studies and make logical decisions based on them? Right now, Governor Parnell has just gone full steam ahead, despite the fact that his own study done by the Department of Transportation shows that this project doesn't pencil out in any way, shape, or form.
Well, Emily, you raise a good question in a broader sense, I think, as well. We've got big projects proposed. Alaska likes big things, and we've been able to do a lot of big things in the past, some historic things. But we have right now a lot of big proposals, the Susitna-Wautana Hydro Dam, $5 billion, the in-state gas line. You know, that's not all of our own expense, but it's $45 to $65 billion. There's been talk for many, many years of a road to Nome that might cost as much as $3 billion. An Arctic port, where we have needs in the Arctic that are growing all the time. And the idea of a road to Juneau has been thrown about for quite some time. How do we separate out needs from wants? Because that is a very subjective thing, and what's defined as a need in one part of the state will be seen as a want, perhaps, in another part.
So the Commonwealth North has been having, of which I'm president this year, has been having a series of conferences and looking towards a study program on the state's budget. And we heard for the first time last week from a senior legislator in almost a cry of anguish of how hard it is to be a legislator and to respond and or resist some of the demands for both operating and capital spending, the demands for both seem to be unlimited. Certainly in the capital area, it seems to me there's a real need for rational capital planning. The only thing I can see that possibly can put us, and I'll go back to the one string on my violin, I guess, put us on a course towards rationality in state budgeting is for the public to become involved and sensitive to the issue that we can't sustain capital budgets such as we've had the last couple of years in the $2 billion-plus category, can't sustain those for more than a few more years based on everybody's guesstimate as to what oil prices will be and what flows are. There has to be a public awareness, and the legislature has to feel that. How can that happen? It has to come through, it seems to me, a successful statewide effort, which may be a conference that similar to the ones we've had, but able to tap into more of Alaska and coalesce a view towards the legislature.
And Emily, back to your question about how do we get lawmakers to look at these things, I think that sort of goes hand in hand with this idea of Alaskans educating themselves, looking at the various research and studies that are out there, and then making up their own mind about what they think should be supported and coming forward, talking to their lawmakers about it. Cliff, did you want to add something?
Yes, I agree with Eric. It's important to look at the big picture and look at all the things the state is proposing to spend money on in the operating budget, the capital budget, and think about the choices that involves. And for a long time, Alaskans were accustomed to thinking, hey, we have so much money, we can do anything we want. And we're obviously moving toward and are in a different environment now, as these recent budget deficits show.
Well, we are, but it seems like it's kind of hard to get that message out to people when they're expecting a check for $1,800 very soon. So when we say, hey, we can't keep spending money like this, but here's your permanent fund check. How difficult do you think it is to really get people to understand that this is a reality?
There's something called the Alaska Disconnect, and I think Eric will talk about something like that.
You can talk about the Alaska Disconnect. I think it's getting people to think about their children and grandchildren and what kind of Alaska they want to have for them. But you go ahead. And
I agree with Eric, and the only other point that I would add is there's a well-known phenomenon in Alaska, the Alaska Disconnect, then in other places, when someone moves into the state, like, say, Wisconsin, a state that I recall you might know a little bit about, that the state makes money off the move, right? That normally they're going to pay taxes, and so there's sort of that side of it. Whereas in Alaska, the way our fiscal system is set up, that new migrants often cost more money in the sense that they will consume services and not pay taxes, and after a period of time will also receive permanent fund dividends. And so there's a basic difference in Alaska about the relationship between the government and the citizen that doesn't exist in any other state. And it's been financed by the money from oil revenues for years, and obviously it's going to be harder for that to last.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing Alaska's fiscal future. And one of the things that I wonder if at some point we don't reach critical mass with a growing population, declining revenues, are we going to get to a point where we're going to have to look at taxes? Maria in Eagle River is on the line now with us, and she has a comment about taxes.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been here since 76. I've seen a lot of change, but my question is there consideration for this bringing back the state tax for all of the people, whether you're a citizen or not, of Alaska? And then the other, would timber and coal have been looked at for consideration to open the timber as it was in 76 and etc.?
Certainly. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Maria.
In 2004, which is the last real time we looked at this, the conference said, enshrine the dividend in the Constitution and let's consider a state income tax. So the two seem to have a kind of a political marriage. We want to be sure that we retain the dividend, but an income tax or a sales tax, and there's a lot of a split between the two, is seen to be an inevitable part of our future, and certainly that was the case at that conference, and might well be the result of another conference.
Cliff, go ahead.
To go to the timber and coal part of Maria's question, what I found in my years of working on this is that oil production makes so much more money for the state than some of these other industries. Mm-hmm. I mean, people talk about timber and fishing and coal, and obviously some Alaskans work in those fields. But they don't make anywhere near as much money as oil. Those industries don't, and there's just not as much tax revenue available to the state, even if there was more development in those fields.
What about the idea of, there's been a lot of hype around this idea of eventually getting a gas line, and I'm sure that you gentlemen remember the bumper stickers that said, please give us another boom and we won't screw it up this time. I don't know that we screwed up the first one, but what would happen if the gas line gets built, we start getting income from gas, we combine those revenues with oil, would that be a time then to possibly look at some sort of another endowment that might be put in place for the purpose of living off, at least partially, on our state funding, on the revenue, the interest revenue, the investment revenue from that? Is that an idea that's been looked at all, or is that a possibility?
Well, I'm not an expert on the gas line, although I know that the large diameter gas line, which is still in prospect, when I left the Department of Revenue back in the early 70s, I began to work for something called Gas Arctic, which was the then Trans-Alaska, Trans-Arctic gas line. And today we're seeing the continuance of that same project. The gas line is, number one, way too far off in the future, even at the best guesstimates, that we could wait and continue our existing spending level and not run the risk of running out of money, absolutely running dry at the spending program we have now. So the very simplest answer is we can't wait for the gas line in order to put our fiscal house in order. And I'll leave it there.
The gas line has been talked about. Eric's got his story from the 70s. Mine would be when I graduated from college and came back to Alaska there in 1976. There were three companies traveling around the state promoting three different routes for the gas line. Many, many decades ago. So that's how much there have been discussion over time in Alaska. And it would be a great thing economically for Alaska if it happened. As Eric pointed out, there are very substantial challenges in having the gas line ever happen. If it did, it's, I think, understood that it would not bring quite as much money as the oil pipeline did. And it's difficult for it faces some challenges, and we'll be talking about that at that forum Saturday, October 4th at the Wilder Marson Theater in Anchorage.
Well, let's hear now from Merrick in Fairbanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori. Good to talk with you and your guests. This is an incredibly important subject for Alaska. I think the first thing we've got to think about when we're looking at this issue is just how badly the state's been mismanaged under the current governor and the legislature. They've all taken an oath to uphold and defend the Alaska Constitution, and that includes Article 8. And so when we're dealing with these budget deficits that have now been created by the Parnell administration, we're now deficit spending at the rate of $7 million per day. And as your guests are pointing out, we're going to be broke in about 4 to 5 years. We'll have completely drained the CBR and the SBR. Well, first thing we can't do is we can't give away our oil. And I think the one thing that Alaskans don't understand is at current price and TAPS throughput, we're giving away most of the value of the oil. About $19 billion worth of oil is taken out of Alaska per year. And Alaska is only taking $4 billion. Yet we own the oil. And if we had a simple system where it was a growth system, we take half, the industry takes half, we'd have about $10 billion in revenue this year, and we certainly wouldn't have a budget deficit. I think, too, we have to be thinking about how we employ Hartwig's rule of resource economics. And when we're dealing with a finite resource, we can't just go spend the money on trivial things. We've got to make those investments in the infrastructure that help offset the declines that we're going to see from the finite resources like oil. And so, the obvious investment that I would be making is in a large Danbury gas pipeline, as you were just talking about. We had an analysis completed by Wood Mackenzie, internationally renowned consulting firm, and they found that with a large Danbury gas pipeline up and running, we would have $419 billion in new revenue just over the first 30 years of operation of that gas pipeline. But what the state has done is we've made the decision to allow the companies like Exxon, Conoco, BP that have LNG projects that compete with Alaska to decide when and if we ever get a large dam or a gas pipeline. We've got to stop doing that. We've got to make these decisions for ourselves.
Okay, Merrick, is there a question that you have, or you just wanted to get that out there for discussion?
Well, I think it's for discussion.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, let me just throw one more observation and for your guests to talk about, because I don't think this has gotten enough attention. With PERS, TERS, we've just made the problem worse with House Bill 385. We have a $136 billion obligation to our retirees over the next 70 years. In just 13 years, we're going to have to come up with $3 billion a year for those obligations. So if you and your guests would like to comment on where do you think that money is going to come from for our retirees, or are we heading for a bankruptcy like we saw in Detroit, where a federal judge said you can discharge those obligations to your retirees through bankruptcy.
Well, thank you so much, Merrick. You've given us a lot to think about and to discuss. We are going to take a short break so my guests can wrap their heads around some of these big issues, and we'll be talking more about Alaska's fiscal future as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized John Deere dealer. The Anchorage location just behind the Ship Creek Salmon Fishing offers a wide range of John Deere compact tractors. CraigTaylorEquipment.com.
And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here.
Thank you for joining us for Talk of Alaska in our last 10 minutes here of the program. We're talking about the fiscal future of the state, and clearly we're not going to solve all of what needs to happen in those 10 minutes. But Merrick brought up a number of points. Cliff, would you like to tackle some of those?
Sure. On higher rail taxes, obviously Alaskans had a big debate, I recall, Lori, about this, where Alaska Common Ground had its own two-hour forum on that in terms of the primary election. Obviously there was a vote. What I would say is that with the pipeline, you know, only about 30% or less full, as full as it was at the peak 25 years ago, there's obviously less oil to tax. And so that's just a fact, and we'll let, I'll let the rest of that discussion go by for right now. On the gas line, Eric and I have already just talked about the gas line possibilities. That'll be talked again as well at this forum on Saturday, October 4th at the Wilder Morrison Theater in Anchorage's Lusac Library. And finally, he brings up a good point on pensions. The three of the biggest factors in the operating budget, which is the biggest part of the budget, are kindergarten through 12, you know, 12th grade education, K through 12 education, Medicaid, and retirement assistance, mm-hmm. including pensions. And there was an actuarial error made that the state had a lawsuit about and settled, which was about, and we had the effect of increasing the obligations the state of Alaska has for pensions and other costs of its retirees. And this is a major issue in the operating budget, along with things like Medicaid and K through 12 education.
Did you want to add something?
Simply that all of these issues that Merrick raises and that Cliff addresses need close public attention and scrutiny. The October 4 is the beginning, and it should be the beginning of a process of close public scrutiny so that we can jointly begin to develop answers to our fiscal problems.
We had an email from someone who's listening that wants to know more about what you mean when you say a sustainable future. Beyond just economic sustainability, this Mark says, we're talking mostly about economic sustainability, but ecological sustainability is more critical. Without healthy life support systems, you can't have healthy communities or economies. He goes on to say, once we have consensus that sustainable means lasts forever, not just 20 or 30 years, then you have to look at it from a much broader perspective than just the economics of how we sustain ourselves. What are your thoughts about that?
I agree with him. And Alaskans and sort of the population of the world faces some more difficult choices that he's alluding to, and adds things like climate change get more discussed. And people recognize that what Alaska has run on for 40 or more years, oil revenues, you know, there are some other larger ecological issues associated with that. That's not quite as much we're going to talk about on the October 4th forum, but I do think that that's an important discussion to have.
Here is someone who sent us in an email that says, windfall profits stay almost completely with the producers. Even if SB 71 slows the decline, do high oil prices do anything for our budget except cost us money in high heating and transportation costs? So is it?
Yes, we like high oil prices in Alaska very much, even though it does cost us more in heating prices. You know, I think so. The frustration that I detect with some of the callers is the frustration that we have not dealt with these issues as a community of Alaskans. This is our October 4 opportunity and our opportunity going forward to not leave everything to the state legislature, but to give them our views in a trenchant and coherent way.
I would also say, Lori, in addition to what Eric said, that the high oil prices have saved Alaskans the state budget, as Eric discussed a number of times. But you'll note that we have this major turmoil, conflict, and people dying, and a lot of military strikes in the Middle East. And note that oil prices didn't double. Actually, in the last few weeks, oil prices have been sort of down. So the idea that Alaskans might think of, hey, there'll be a big war in the Arab world, and that will solve all our problems. The oil markets around the world are complicated. They may be changing for some of the reasons people have talked about during this hour. And so Alaskans need to face the reality that oil revenues have been dropping and look likely, under all the best estimates, to continue to drop.
One of the things we haven't discussed much is, and we only have a few minutes left, but the concern over declining federal dollars coming into the state. How do we even begin to understand what that's going to look like in the next 10 years, say, even a decade from now?
Well, I think, I guess I'm a one-note person, but I feel that engagement is the key word engagement in issues. We all owe a really debt of gratitude to Common Ground and Cliff for sponsoring the October 4 meeting, which I trust will lead to an engaged process where Alaskans can get together and begin to deal with and grapple with these problems, because they are not only more urgent than they were 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, but they're more sophisticated. The answers are not as easy as they might have been when I was Commissioner of Revenue in 1970 and we suddenly had $900 million and the prospect of a pipeline. So unless the public engages and becomes part of the process, we aren't going to find solutions, in my view.
Go ahead, Cliff.
I just want to say that I want to thank everybody at Alaska Common Ground and Institute of Social and Economic Research for helping us put on this forum along with our co-sponsors on Saturday, October 4th, because this is, as I keep saying, the biggest and most important problem facing the state, and people have put it off for a number of years, and they need to understand that it's coming back at us, and we have to think about how to deal with it, because avoiding it will only make the ultimate way it's handled much more brutal, vicious, and savage.
Do you, in the conversation that you will be having with Alaskans, do you plan to have a track that looks at some of the contingencies that we may be dealing with in the future, such as the impacts of climate change, what's going to be happening with slumping infrastructure and a pipeline, the TAPS line that is at kind of the end of what its life was supposed to be, where we may need some major spending there, erosion in coastal communities, the advent of storms that we might have to plan for, or these types of things. Are you going to be looking at some of those things as well?
To the degree that those things require higher spending, for example, by the state government, that is sort of built into the structure of this forum, that's a difficult thing. The state is facing declining revenues, but as you point out, some things that also put pressure to increase budget expenditures.
Well, thank you so much to my guests today, Eric Woolforth and Cliff Groh. The Alaska Common Ground discussion, as you've heard, will be on October 4th. Thanks to the crew, Dave Waldron, Ashley Snyder, and Josh Edge. I'm Lori Townsend. Annie Fite will be with you on Talk of Alaska next week. Thanks for joining us.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, with health plans designed specifically for Alaska businesses. Learn more at primera.com/newalaska, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.